Hi there, and welcome to the Raconteur Games Storyteller Campfire. My name is Nicholas Laborde, and I'm the founder and chief storyteller. If you aren't familiar, raconteur is an old French term for storyteller. We tell stories. Sometimes this leads us to other storytellers, and in those cases, we gather around the campfire Louisiana style. If you aren't familiar with how we tell stories in Louisiana, it goes a little like this. We talk about everything except the purpose of conversation, eventually get around to what we need, and at the end, everyone walks away thinking, I don't know what I got out of that conversation, but I'm glad that I had it. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest, a former political staffer in Washington, D.C., turned indie developer and voice actor, Cyrus Nomadi. Cyrus, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, and I hope you are as well.
Yes, yes. Well, it was good until I met you.
Yeah, this is the DC thing coming back to bite me, isn't it?
I just immediately put you back in DC mode. I'm sorry. And you know, for any longtime listeners of the podcast, typically we go around the indie sphere and we find people who are contributing to the indie space and talk about what inspires them and their journeys. Sometimes you know about them, and this time you probably don't. But Cyrus stuck out to me because I was doing a Reddit post about positivity and giving back to others. And of course, there were like 5 to 10% of people that were just mean because it's the internet and, you know, Reddit. Enough is said there. And Cyrus was in the comments and just said, hey, you know, I'm a former political staffer and I'm making games now. And I thought to myself, all right, I got to talk to this guy because I am sure that he has some good stories.
Yeah, it is a crazy world out there, and I am glad to have escaped it. I moved from D.C. to California, and I don't plan on going back.
I mean, Nomadi 2020?
Oh, God, I couldn't imagine anything worse. Actually, no, I can, because I feel like, you know, that's the world we live in. But anyway, I only have to go once a year now.
Oh, there you go, there you go.
I will say that I wasn't a political staffer, because that implies that I was working for someone in Senate or Congress. I was working for big old think tanks on influencing those people. So, I wasn't quite in the depths of it in that way.
I mean, I should just call this episode The Senator. Well, still equally interesting and not a typical background that a game developer would come from. So I am very glad to have you here, Cyrus. So
thank you.
Let's roll right into that first question, that great question that hits so hard. And I know that you possibly haven't had years to ponder this meaningful life question because you've just made the transition. Why do you make games, Cyrus?
Because I love them and I want to inspire people and show them that they can have that kind of creativity the way I did when I was a kid, when I used to play LucasArts adventure games, when I first played Thief 2 and felt that, you know, there was a real world being built around me. If I can be a part of creating that world, despite, you know, being not one of the smart programmers at the table, I feel like incredibly blessed to be in that industry.
Absolutely. And you know that I think that sense of wonder, you know, I've talked to so many people, you know, on this podcast and off about, you know, the moments that inspired them to get into game design. And there's, it always kind of comes back to this very similar thread of like, you're playing a game or you were a kid and you just think like, this is so magical. This is not just, you know, pixels on a screen. This is an entire world that real people made. I could actually do this and get paid to do this and make things that other people can enjoy. And it's just like, what I like to call the gaming nirvana moment. Like when Gautama ascended to become the Buddha when he achieved enlightenment. I feel like that's the moment that everyone has in this industry when they decide like, this is a thing and I want to do this.
Yeah, I feel like I've had a lot of those moments and in different ways. I mean, I feel like games in a lot of ways are like movies where they can seem wondrous and something that is totally not within your realm. But sometimes, you know, there's a breaking at the seams. And when there is that break at the seams, you can figure out how it all came together. and realize that it's not impossible. It's not ridiculous. Like, I can be a part of this creation. Like, for me, I had a number of games that inspired me, but one of the ones that was really broken at the seams but was still an amazing game was Anachronox. And I'm not usually into that sort of game, if anybody hasn't played it, and I imagine a lot of you haven't. It's a Western-style JRPG type of game set in the future, and you're going to different planets, but it was well-written and pretty broken. Like, the skyboxes had the seams showing at all times, so you knew that there wasn't infinite space and just a picture. But it's like seeing a matte painting in a movie that isn't that good. It lets you know that there are real people involved in creating that illusion. And that's, well, as Gandalf once said in an episode of Extras, the whole thing is illusion. And that's what I love about
Gandalf, it. Gandalf, my favorite ancient Roman poet. I told you, man, the jokes are lame on this podcast.
I don't mind at all.
Excellent. So, you know, this my next question is kind of a segue between this one and formal question number two. So, bonus question. Get ready. So,
all right.
Tell me a little more about how you found your way to Washington, D.C., and the moment that led you, or the experience and decision that led you to decide to work on games. So kind of just like the brief rundown of how you got to D.C. and how long you were there, and then tell me about the moment where you decided, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. Well, I was born in D.C., so I never really got there. And working for or against government one way or another is basically what people there do. So I started, I think I was temping, and then I got into web development, and then I got into editorial work and production work. So I was working for various different organizations. One of them that I still love dearly was the Center for Democracy and Technology, which worked on internet civil liberties, which I'm not sure we have them anymore. But yeah, I made a valiant effort while I was there. And then I worked with larger think tanks on everything from national security to education, just helping get their word out. But the thing that was really driving me nuts is that I was working so hard. Like, I worked all the time. I worked really late hours, but I felt, what am I actually doing? Like, when I am dead, you know, not to be morbid, what will I have left behind? Like, do I really, like, care about what I'm doing? And the answer was kind of no. And I know it may not seem very noble, but I kind of felt that I would be doing more by creating instead of commenting on or talking about how something can be changed. I just wanted to make things. And when I was a kid, I always thought it was impossible. You know, I didn't grow up in a family that had anything in the world of entertainment, really. So it was always thought to be impossible. But I started doing this voiceover thing. I almost lost my hearing several years ago. And when I got over that, I said, if I want to do this, and I always wanted to do it since I was a kid, it is time. So I put together a demo. I started talking to other game developers. And lo and behold, like, they were actually listening to me and wanting more of my input. And I got into writing games through voiceover. And I just realized, I can't do this DC thing anymore. So I told the people at my cushy job it was time for me to leave and go to California. And they politely told me I was crazy and bid me on my way. And, you know, we still have a good relationship, but they definitely think I'm insane.
Well, I mean, you could think about that of any perspective. It's like the almost not the same. It's not 100% analogous, but it's like, you know, the legendary veteran corporate person who quits to go, you know, live on a beach full time or something, you know, and everybody's like, oh, you're crazy. But really, the person leaving has probably achieved some internal realization that all of those people wish they could have achieved.
Yeah, I really want to know the story of the BioWare guys, like the guys that started BioWare. They were both doctors.
They were.
And then they're starting this, like, nerdy RPG company. I'm like, where the hell did that happen? Like, who told them that was okay? And how are they awesome enough to ignore them?
Well, and you know, that's a great question, and that's the exact reason that this podcast exists, to find out the questions behind those formative moments of people that, you know, are doing things in games and indies, the indie sector specifically. And I can't imagine the moment where undoubtedly they had student loan debt and medical school debt, and yeah. they're early into their medical career, and they basically just say, all right, mom, dad, brothers and sisters, friends and family, I spent all these years and all that time and money to become a doctor and you know, make humanity a better place. So I'm going to make video games now.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so amazing. And you know, they weren't even jumping into a sector that was full of high-earning games. Like, the RPGs before then, like, I assume they made money here and there, and they made good money if you were one person, but they really went for it, and that's pretty amazing.
So what's – and this can be related to your build-up to getting into games, so don't feel restricted to make this specifically a game answer since you're still recently entering into our industry. So question number two is, what's your most vivid memory about working in this industry or working in all the things you've done up to now? It can be a positive experience or a bad experience. What we're going for is just something formative that led you to the person that you are today.
Gosh, I think it was working with the studio that I'm still with, Lunchtime Studios, and we've been working on a game that's poker with cheating, set in the 1920s during Prohibition, and you know, we got speakeasies and gangsters. Ooh. And all that stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I was working for them just as a voice actor, and later as I got hired as a writer, as the lead writer, and then I got brought on as the producer. And started just taking on more and more. But I remember we were getting ready for PAX West 20... Oh, I don't know. We've been working on this game too long. But we were up all night, and I was doing camera tracks for the game. I was re-recording some audio for the game. I was doing some of the scripting work to make sure that various animations and such were being called. And I'm like, holy God, I'm doing all this stuff and I don't know what I'm doing. And that's okay. And, you know, we went out and we had a good show and we were absolutely exhausted. But, I mean, I could do it. I could do it. It was not
you
ridiculous. And I was helping the team do everything. Yeah. And now I pretty much, you know, run the team and make sure that, you know, we're hitting on all cylinders and, you know, we're getting ready for an iOS release and all the crap that goes around that, because we're a strange studio where some of us are quite old and some of us are pretty young. So, you know, things like the Steam achievements and cards and Game Center, they're a little bit arcane to some of the staff that was just working on like older games back when you just bought them in a store from a box. But, you know, the fact that I can work with these people generally, like, and having that crunch experience, I know that it's a bad thing in the industry, but for me, being initially an outsider, having it brought to me, that was, you know, feeling like part of a team was pretty cool.
And you say that you're trying to get away from all that Washington, D.C. nature. You started as a voice actor, and now you're a producer. It's in your blood, Cyrus. You are climbing, and yeah. You don't even see it.
I can't help it. I just can't help it.
Look for Cyrus Nomadi on season 6 of House of Cards.
Oh, no. I actually got an audition for
really?
House of Cards.
Tell me about that.
I know everybody there was like, what the hell is wrong with you? Because everyone in D.C. loves House of Cards. But I pretty much assumed that I wasn't the right guy for it. I'm not even like 5'5", so what are they going to cast me as? Like, I don't even know. You know, now I kind of regret it. That would have been good.
All right, we are already 2 questions down. You're doing well, Cyrus. You could still mess up, of course.
Excellent.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, I'll try.
All right. Question number 3, the wild card question. Now, this changes for every guest, and in 2017, we've got a nice slew of new questions, and Cyrus is going to get the first instance of this question. So, Cyrus, are you ready?
Oh, boy, am I ready.
All right. What's something that you believe that other people think is insane?
Something I believe that other people think is insane. Well, like I told you before, that anybody can do this. I mean, well, okay, no, that sounds like a cop-out kind of answer. Something I believe. I have a lot of very stupid American sorts of thoughts sometimes about, like, you know, that if you want something bad enough, you can do it, even if it seems ridiculous. And I know that I'm, like, I'm 36, so I am aging, and it is, like, rapidly becoming out of the reach of my deteriorating brain.
That's the best description I've ever heard of aging. My deteriorating brain.
But, I mean, certainly back east, everybody thought that I was crazy for doing something that didn't make financial sense. Like, I had an opportunity to have something cushy, to just, you know, do the job, go home, maybe buy a place, and I felt that it wasn't worth it. Yeah, because, like, I need okay, well, let me take a step back and think about what I'm saying instead of just babbling.
That's okay. That's okay.
I really think that creating something is more important than anything else. Like, I understand that I left a world where things aren't really good right now, but I think that this is more important. I think that entertainment is more important because I think that we, more than anyone else, have the opportunity to change the way we talk about just about any subject. And it's not that we're changing the subject itself, but if we're framing things in different ways, if we're saying that something is okay or something is possible that wasn't really discussed before, we can start different conversations. And that's what everybody in DC talks about doing. Like, we're changing the conversation. We're changing the conversation. No, you're not. You're saying you are all the time. You need to create a framework around it, something that is something that speaks to the humanity around it. And I feel like that counts for more in entertainment. Like, you know, we have movies like Philadelphia that get people talking about AIDS where they weren't talking about AIDS before, or a Hotel Rwanda that open people's eyes in ways that just telling them facts do not. I think that entertainment really matters more in that way, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Excellent answer, Cyrus. You know, it's that Thank drive you. To create that inspires all artists. And when we let me back up my thought there. All the thoughts are swirling around, and I'm trying to articulate them. It's like my words and my mouth don't match right now. Okay, so when you know that you are an artist of whatever medium, whatever way, whatever path, however you'd like to explain your philosophy and your views to the world, it's that innate desire to create. That was an unintentional rhyme. The innate desire to create. It's a kid's show now. That innate desire to create is what defines our decisions and what we choose to pursue and what we view as important. You know, I come from a business background, so I'm not a typical developer by any means. So we're very similar but different in that regard. And I have a business degree for my bachelor's, and I'm getting my MBA in just a couple of weeks. Fingers crossed, it's almost over. It's almost
Congratulations.
Over. Graduate school is not something I'd wish upon my worst enemy. Totally worth it now rather than try to do it like 10 or 15 years in the future. But, I'm burnt out.
yeah, that's the right way to do it.
For sure. But it's that desire to create and give back that makes art worth experiencing, I feel.
Well, and I think creating new perceptions and realities. I mean, that's the crazy part of it. So I was watching a movie on Netflix recently, which it was on my list forever, and I finally sat down and watched it, Secret of Kells. And it's about this Irish monastery, and it's about a kid who is learning illumination from an elder that will prevent the next catastrophe happening to this medieval world. So it's very much set in this Christian medieval kind of setup. But the people in the scriptorium, there's like a Jamaican guy and there's an Asian guy, and you're watching it and you know, they're hanging around with some of these Irish people, and you're thinking this doesn't really make sense. But soon enough, that just kind of fades into the background, and the people in it are all that matters. Like, it may not be historically accurate, but the story's still being told, and you still have these varied perspectives on it. And even though it seems ridiculous, it doesn't matter in the end. And that's really, really cool. Like, I take a lot of inspiration from that. And it's that sort of power that we have in entertainment to change perspective artificially. And it's okay if it's artificial. It doesn't matter for us.
As long as it's something that lets you see things through a new lens or explore a new idea, then it's accomplished its goal.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. I mean, we're not bound by the laws of reality.
Of course. And this is, I'm going to preface this by saying this is not a game about changing perspectives. It very much celebrates how perspectives will not be changed. But I still think one of the greatest surprises in recent years, and I can't believe this game is literally almost 3 weeks old. 3 weeks old. 3 years old in a couple of weeks. Wolfenstein: The New Order. It was just such a fantastic game so unexpectedly, because it was this new interpretation of Wolfenstein. Everybody thought, okay, cool, some like, you know, mindless Nazi killing. It's going to be fun. It's going to be brutal, all that good stuff. I came for the Nazi explosions, and I left with a heavy heart. It was actually a super...
Yeah, with a tear in your
eye. Super heartfelt, like... story that was in that game, and nobody expected the story in Wolfenstein.
No, and it wasn't ashamed of it either. Like, it really went for it, and it built its world and its people, and it wasn't ashamed to be a game that had a story. I mean, yeah, the Nazi shooting was fun, but really, it mattered because of what the characters did.
Absolutely. And you know, only... I feel like now we're in a time where you can take a 20-plus-year-old franchise and all of a sudden make it relevant and a different take on it. I feel like Bethesda's treated the id Software games like that. That's a whole other discussion. But
there's
so many ways that ideas can be expressed through different lenses that is just only possible in game design. Good answer, man. Good discussion.
All right.
Okay, so back to you, Cyrus. Question number four. And you take as long as you need. What do you think is the greatest story ever told? It can be a book, it can be a movie, it can be a game, it can be graffiti in an alleyway that you saw in a dumpster, which has been a previous example in this very show.
Right. Well, I actually don't have to take much time, because the easiest answer is the fine answer for me. I love unabashedly Lord of the Rings. I mean, I grew up with it when I was, so my dad is from Iran and my mother's from New England. And, you know, they didn't read a lot of this sort of thing growing up. But I found The Hobbit in the way too expensive bookstore when I was 7. And I really wanted it and I got it. And I just dove into it. And just the way that Tolkien created the world and everything around it to make even the smallest sorts of things matter. I really don't think anyone has ever surpassed it. I mean, there's just so much in every nook and cranny, and you can dig as deep as you like. I have all these like nerdy Tolkien glossary and bestiary books where it's showing you the parts of the world that, you know, you didn't really think of, and you think about how they connect to that larger world, and it just made everything so big and so significant. And there's, you know, it's your standard good and evil story, and, you know, how man versus nature, and corruption versus purity. And I have always loved it. And I know it's the easy answer, but I can't have any other answer.
We look for the honest answers here at the podcast. Look, at the campfire, we had an episode with Adam Orth, who made the great Adrift game. You know, I asked him as kind of a side question, you know, what's the most important thing you've learned recently? And just without, like, taking a beat, he goes, well, I'm going to give you the honest answer. And it's about taxes. And I just thought it was so interesting to learn about, you know, taxes when running my small business and things like that. And he was like, it's probably not the answer you wanted, but that's the honest answer. And that's exactly what this is about. I don't want the PR answer. I want the true answer, the first thing that comes to your heart. Because like the great fictional character Stephen Colbert once said, truthiness. And if you're not if you're not as apprised of old Stephen Colbert, on his very first episode, he created a word that he called truthiness, where he said, it doesn't matter if it's factually correct, but if it feels correct in your gut, then it's true. And that's truthiness. And that has a disturbing parallel to modern day events. And that is all I'm going to say about that.
George Costanza had a similar quote, and if you tell a lie long enough, you begin to believe it.
Oh, my goodness. So, Question number five, Cyrus. You've done well. You've got 4 out of 5. That's an 80%. You know, it's passing. It's not the best, but you could bow out now if you really want. Okay. Question number five, Cyrus. The arguably the most important question, the send-off question. What is the one piece of advice that you would give to any storyteller, regardless of the medium?
I would say, yeah, don't be afraid to, well, I mean, it's once again, an easy answer because it's a common thread of advice, but don't be afraid to throw out your babies. Don't be afraid to iterate. The first thing that you create will never, ever be perfect. So like, for this Lords of New York game that I'm working on, where we're doing a story mode, and I think that I have thrown out my script, I don't know, 14 times so far, which is probably too many. I mean, I only throw out parts, and it gets better and better every time. But, you know, sometimes you write that first draft, and you think, man, I'm pretty brilliant. And then it's worth it to just, you know, put it away and look at it later and realize that you're really not that brilliant. There's always something that can be improved. And it's good to not have too much emotional attachment to it. I mean, yeah, that's something that is probably a hard lesson to learn and a hard thing to learn generally, to lose that emotional attachment. But, you know, from coming from that business perspective, that you can come up with something better by not having that emotional attachment. I mean, you can step away and see things from, you know, have that out-of-body experience and see, what was I thinking when I was creating this? Or does this make sense? It's the smart thing to really iterate and not get too attached to what you originally created. It can always get better through other people's influence and through your own influence.
Absolutely, 100% well said, Cyrus. You know, I was in a very similar position to what you were just describing earlier this year. We worked on a game throughout 2016 that unfortunately we had to make the call to cancel in early January.
Yeah.
Great start to the new year, canceling that project.
Right.
But we learned a lot from that. And ultimately, when we were in the trenches, in the moment, tunnel vision, looking at it, we thought it was great. We thought it was awesome. It was going to be so cool. It was going to be the next Undertale, actual words from me.
Uh-huh.
And we had some problems in the production pipeline because we made a kind of silly decision about an art style that only like 3 people on the planet could do, which at the time I saw as a loving, wonderful challenge.
Yep.
And then that turned out to be a liability to, you know, how easy it was to produce this game, and combined with other issues relating to the gameplay and it being fun and stuff like that. You know, we took a step back from it for a little while because we released our game Evangeline back in February.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, back in like December, we went viral on Reddit. So it's like that project kind of skyrocketed in terms of priority for us. We thought that was going to be the small project that no one cared about. And then a GIF gets 2 million views on Imgur. It's like, well, shit.
Yep. The path
now
is
now we got to make it real good.
Yeah.
So our focus kind of started to shift from that other project that had to be canceled. And then by the time the moment arrived to have to make the call to cancel it, it was not a hard call to make because we had that distance. We stepped back from it. We weren't as attached and said, you know what? This has given us a lot of issues. Unfortunately, we loved working on it, but it's not going to work and we have to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is something where I feel like my experience as a voice actor in games gives me a little bit more visibility into that sort of world, because I can't tell you the number of games that I have done voices for where people really were engaged and they're never going to come out. And there's usually something, there's usually a common thread when there's a game that, you know, looks really enticing at first and, you know, people are just devoted to that original vision that isn't working, and you know that the game is never going to come out. And it's a really, really sad thing because making games is so hard, but taking that step away is so important. And I know that a lot of these people, you know, maybe it was their first game or their second game, they could be on like their 7th or 8th game by now and they could be getting better and better, but you know, it's really tough. It's a really, really hard thing. And I experience it with my own teams. I have like as a developer, I have a credit on 3 games. As a voice actor, I have a credit on many, many more. But I feel like the voice acting credits have really helped with that sort of perspective.
And you never know where perspective is going to help you. You know, a job that you worked 10 years ago might not seem relevant, but one day you're in that one position and you're like, man, that was actually useful to this moment.
Yeah.
I think that is one of the things about life. Now, I'm 22. I'm not old and wise. I'm just going to say that before I give this little spiel. But a thread I've gotten from this podcast, from talking to people who are far older than me and just throughout life, is that you don't know how any experience will provide value, but one day it probably will, and especially in a way that you don't expect.
Yeah, have you ever waited tables?
I haven't done waiting tables, but I've done retail.
Oh, yeah. So you know what it's like where sometimes you see the depths of humanity, but, you know, you really bond with the team, and it can be a really fun and horrible experience because some people, like, they go into any sort of service industry and they feel like, you know, I am out here to be served, and they want to be royalty for a day, and that can teach you quite a lot.
It teaches you, one, how to deal with people that you really don't want to deal with, which is also another magical skill in life that everyone should learn to have. It teaches you to be patient.
Yeah.
It teaches you to keep a cool head. And it also teaches you to one day eventually have a very productive outlet for all of your inner rage.
Exactly. You create your villains. Like you write about what you hate. That's the easiest thing to do.
Absolutely. Oh, man. I've had some references in our games that you wouldn't know unless I told you that it was about someone I knew, but they're in there.
Yep. I love doing that. Oh, God. Yeah, I wrote a script recently where I threw out all my rage at my think tank job, and specifically with the national security industry, which sucks and is horrible and stupid, and I shouldn't be saying these things. Unfortunately, the studio I was working with passed on that script because they were working on something similar, but I'm going to put those jokes out somewhere.
Well, write what you know, whether you like it or you don't.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man. Well, Cyrus, this has been an excellent chat, but we've come to the end of the campfire questions. The campfire is sizzling out and the marshmallows are all gone.
Aw.
It's a sad moment.
It really is.
But this has to happen. Every great campfire eventually sizzles out. That should be like the epitaph on my tombstone.
I like that. I actually quite like that.
Like 20 years from now, like someone's going to pick that random line out of this specific episode and use that to describe whatever has become of either of us.
This is our time capsule. I like it.
I love it. Good stuff. So, Cyrus, thank you so much for doing this. I had an excellent time. I hope you did, too.
I did. Thank you so much for having me on.
This was just such a fun thing. So, listeners of The Campfire, thank you so much for tuning in and for listening to all of the great wisdom and perspective of the great Cyrus Nemati, the next game designer that you will know about very soon.
Gorsh.
Thank you for tuning in. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see you soon.